everybody. Bill Buckmaster welcoming you to the Buckmaster Show on this St. Patrick's Day, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, and being a guy from Chicago of Irish descent on my mother's side, mom being a first-generation American from Ireland. It's a big day. It was a big day for me growing up, and Tom, I know it was for you as well.
Indeed. And I also understand that the city of Chicago has dyed the river green again.
Yep.
They didn't do it last
No, they didn't do
St.
it.
Patrick's
they took
Day.
The they paused the tradition last year. The word was they didn't want a lot of crowds around, and they had set the word out that there would be no dyeing of the Chicago River green this year. But then the city officials surprised everybody, and they kind of brought St. Patrick's Day a couple of days early and did it so there wouldn't be a lot of crowds. But the river, Chicago River, is or was probably it's probably dissipated, but it's. It was green again. Anyway, it's Buckmaster in our 11th year here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show contributor on health is Dr. Victoria Mazes, the Andrew Weil Endowed Chair in Integrative Medicine and the Executive Director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. She's a professor of medicine, family medicine, and public health, internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine, and is committed to health promotion and pioneering change efforts that solve America's healthcare system problems. She's the editor of the Oxford University textbook, Women's Integrative Health, and author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. Learn more about her at her website, Victoria Mazes, MAIZESMD.com, or follow her on Twitter at VMazes. Victoria Mazes joining us now. Dr. Mazes, how are you?
I am doing well. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Well, thank you very much, and to you as well. This is a year ago, the pandemic really began in force. Everything went south. I kind of mark St. Patrick's Day as 2020 as a very dark year. A year later, Dr. Mazes, there is light at the end of the tunnel. People seem to be feeling much better. They're more confident. They're getting their shots. And we'll talk a little bit about shots first, but then we'll kind of talk about what I call as almost a collective post-traumatic stress syndrome that we're all going through, and we'll talk a little bit about grief. But first of all, with shots, there is some really good news that folks are going back, in the vast majority of cases, for their second shot.
Yes, this is really good news. Both Pfizer and Moderna vaccines require two shots. And everyone was very concerned about would people come back for their second shots? Would they get scheduled? Would they remember? Would they be willing to bear that jab, as they call it, a second time? And it turns out about 88% of Americans have gotten their second shot. And the news is really even better than that because another 8.6% haven't yet gotten them because they're not yet due for them. So the vast, vast majority, only about 3.5% of people have missed their second shot.
And this is unusual because the research literature, Dr. Mazes, points out that in many cases, roughly half of patients never get a second or third dose. And when you're talking about multi-dose vaccines, take the shingles shot. I had both doses, but I remember talking to many people who said, you know, I had that first shot. And then I know I had to go back, but I forgot about it. So multi-dose vaccines can be troublesome.
Yeah, they're much, much harder to be sure that we do them and do them well. For COVID-19, while one shot does give you some degree of protection, we really know that you need the two shots to get the 95% protection from COVID and serious COVID that the vaccines were shown to have in the study. So we're very eager. But I'm going to tell you another reason why getting the shot to begin with, but getting both shots may be particularly important. And that's that when people get COVID, about 10 to 15% have long symptoms. And this isn't just people who are very sick with it, who are in the hospital or very sick at home. These are people who have mild conditions or even were perhaps asymptomatic. And yet they have these drawn out symptoms of fatigue and dizziness, and some of them have, you know, much more significant shortness of breath and muscle aches and brain fog. And it turns out that about 30 to 40% of people who have reported this long COVID get better after getting vaccinated.
Wow.
Exactly. It is a wow.
I had not heard that, and that the so-called long-termers has been really scary, Dr. Maces.
Absolutely. I have to say it's one of the things that made me very eager to get vaccinated is I didn't want to get that long-haul COVID. And I think, you know, some young people who say, well, I'm probably not that likely to die of this infection, still should be concerned, because these long haulers, as you call them, long COVID, the name hasn't quite been settled on, but it happens to all ages. It is not just a function of, well, old people may get that, you know, who are the most vulnerable to getting seriously ill. It cuts across all ages. We don't fully understand why the vaccine is making people with long COVID better. So while we're thrilled, we don't really know. One possible mechanism that's been suggested by a Yale researcher, an immunologist, Akiko Iwasaki, very well-respected immunologist, is that it's possible that people who are getting the long COVID haven't fully cleared the virus. They're just not developing a robust enough immune response to clear the virus. And so the vaccine, which then creates all of these additional antibodies and ramps up the other side, the T cell side of your immune system, may finish off the job. And a lot of people actually are reporting this absolutely sudden, like 3 days after, 4 days after they get the vaccine, they're suddenly well again. So it's not this gradual improvement, which you might more typically expect to see. It's like a light switch. They're rapidly getting better.
Do we know why some people have a more robust reaction to the second shot than others?
Well, and that's a booster shot. So
the booster shot.
It's intended, you know, to amplify the initial response to the vaccine that you got when you got your first shot. And so on some level, it's doing just what's expected, which is a more significant response of the immune system. But I think it's really unclear, you know, it's less common as we get older than, you know, young people. And yet, you know, I have heard people tell me from all ages and both genders that, wow, that second shot was really tough. And I've had other people say they had no side effects at all.
Yeah, and I will share with our listeners that I had about a 46-hour reaction with, you know, a feverish, not a high temperature by any means, but around 100, and chills and everything. But after a couple of days, it was gone, and it was like I had no after effects whatsoever. So I think some people are going to get that reaction, and I'll just take it that maybe I've got a very good, robust immune system. And, so I'll take it for what it is.
Yes, and we are encouraging people to see that as a sign that their immune system is mounting an immune response and developing antibodies. And, you know, that's a good thing. That is what we want. The other good thing, if people are hesitant, is that this isn't the full-fledged flu. It's not, you know, 10 to 14 days of feeling ill. It's typically 24 to 36 hours. It sounds like yours was a little longer, but not much.
Yeah, not much longer. All right, let's switch topics, but first we will take the break. When we continue with Dr. Mazes, the topic is grief and kind of a collective feeling. Many of us sighing relief here. We're a year into this pandemic, but I want to explore the whole idea of grief with Dr. Victoria Mazes after we take the break. But first, right now, be a great time to go up to join Steve, the owner and chief baker, up at Mona's Danish Bakery for lunch. I'm sure he's got some St. Patrick's Day goodies for you, which would be kind of a fun way to celebrate today. They are open right now for lunch up at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle, and they are open during the week, 6:30 in the morning, and of course they're open on weekends as well for breakfast and lunch. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. At the website, you can go ahead and order your bakery goods. Of course, you could call ahead or just walk into the bakery and take your goods, sit down. There's some limited dining and there's plenty of room outside on the patio. We continue on this St. Patrick's Day 2021 on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zilkalo Village Studios on St. Patrick's Day 2021. Our live line guests appear on the program courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Green Things, a good place to go on St. Patrick's Day, is located at 3384 East River Road. They're open daily, and they have 13 acres of amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more. Good time to stop by this afternoon. Put some spring color into your backyard garden. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Zocalo Village also on the property with some beautiful Talavera pottery, handmade furniture, much of it from Latin America, some beautiful things. Let's resume now our conversation with our contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes, the executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona and the endowed chair in integrative medicine at the Weil Center. Dr. Victoria Mazes, we're at kind of the one-year mark when you hit an anniversary like this. We're glad we made it, quite frankly, glad we made it through this alive. Many of us, however, did come down with COVID, and we talked a little bit about so-called long-termers, people still suffering the effects. So, you know, when you have an anniversary like this, I think it brings out kind of two emotions. Yes, we're happy we made it so far, but we're filled with grief as well.
Yeah, I think it's really important to acknowledge the grief that we're feeling. There are, of course, people who have had huge losses, death of a loved one, or themselves been hospitalized. Maybe they haven't fully regained their health. And these are huge losses that are grieved. But almost everybody in our entire society has suffered some smaller losses. So perhaps it's not being able to visit your grandchildren because we've been told of the increased risk as we got older. Perhaps it's not being able to go into your job and work together with your work team who you enjoy being with. Maybe it was a vacation you had planned, or you were going to have a big wedding and that had to be put on hold. Everybody's experiencing these losses. And I know whenever I complain of some loss that I've experienced, I always feel a little guilty. I want to say, you know I'm so much more fortunate than others.
Go ahead. Well, you know, and I was thinking about people who had planned. I have a niece who was just so excited about her big wedding day. Obviously, it was going to be a huge occasion. And she scheduled it last February, made the announcement in February, right before all of this hit, that there would be the wedding was going to happen up at Lake Tahoe on Labor Day. And of course, a couple of weeks later, she had to cancel and still has not reset the wedding date. But think about all those kinds of big kind of momentous events in people's lives that had to be put on hold.
That's a perfect example. You know, there are kids who didn't get to their prom. They didn't get to compete in their sport. You know, a lot of these things are just lost. You don't get to go back and graduate from high school a second time. So I think that it is really worth acknowledging that these small losses create a real experience of grief. And a researcher named Ken Doka, a very well-respected researcher, wrote about this kind of grief. He called it disenfranchised grief. And essentially, it's the name for grief that isn't routinely acknowledged. You know, nobody died. No major loss occurred. And yet, they're still suffering. And it is important not to discount. It is important to validate that all of us have really experienced losses this past year.
Dr. Mazes, can we go over a couple of the steps that that can be taken to acknowledge someone's grief?
Absolutely. So I think first, you know, the conversation we're having, that this is real. that one doesn't have to say, you know, I'm so fortunate, which may be true. One can acknowledge that there has been a real loss. And so validating it, having other people validate it, you know, when someone else says, but I know I'm so fortunate compared to many, it's good to say, yes, and you've experienced the loss. Getting support, whether that's from friends or a therapist, being able to talk about the loss that you've experienced, because a lot of times when you have a loss, you feel isolated. And it's actually helpful to hear, yes, I had to cancel my wedding, my vacation, my graduation plan, whatever it is, I had to cancel that too. And I think that it disturbs, it breaks up that sense of isolation. For some people, creating a ritual. We all know in many ways a funeral, a memorial service, that's a major ritual for helping us process the loss of a human being. But maybe there's some smaller ritual, like I'm wondering for your niece, is there something she could do? Were there wedding invitations? You know, could she have some kind of ceremony where she burns them? Or maybe she wants to send them with a note to people saying, I'm sorry we didn't have this celebration together. You know, we're replanning for a later date. So finding some way to ritualize the loss. And then, of course, you know, can you help somebody else? Is there something you can do, random acts of kindness? In the article I read, there was a lovely example where someone was checking out and talking about how she had lost her mother to COVID, and she was about to cook her mother's favorite dinner, and this person who overheard the conversation paid for her groceries. So she gave the woman an experience of, yes, there's the loss of the mother, and other human beings care. Someone cared enough, a stranger, to pay for her groceries.
And then, you know, the acceptance. You don't have to force yourself to be happy, but you can find some little joys, perhaps, to begin with.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes that can give us a break. That can be the thing that just brings us back to center ourselves. So I think it's really worth it for everyone, since we've all experienced these losses, to think about, you know, is there something I could do right now that might bring me joy? If you live in southern Arizona, we are beginning to have a beautiful spring. Can you go out and see the blooms on the Ocotillo or the trees that are beginning to bloom? And might that lift your spirits? There are things that are opening back up. Is there a place you could go to that you've missed that might give you a sense of joy? So what could you do in your life that would bring back a sense of joy?
It's been a very difficult year for so many of us. And how are you and your team able to cope at the Weill Center for Integrative Medicine? How did you get through this year?
Well, thank you for asking. In some ways, we were fortunate. We were able to telework. And we have a lot of skill of online teaching, and so we were better positioned than many. But we had, of course, the loss of community, because we have a team that's worked together for a long time and now couldn't see each other. So we instituted, at all different levels, regular Zoom meetings. We did it as a group of directors. We did it for our whole staff. Working teams met weekly. And this was in place of what you would normally do informally in a place of work, where you would just get to stop by someone's desk and chat for a while and check in. And so we formalized that so that people weren't feeling so isolated.
What are the plans now? Have you decided on a re-entry plan for the center?
The university is really working on this right now, and our center, of course, as part of the University of Arizona, will follow those rules. The good news is that the university has made vaccination possible for all of the staff and faculty, and so everyone's either vaccinated or on their way to being vaccinated. So that makes some new things possible. But as you know, the CDC is still saying, you know, keep distance, wear masks indoors, unless you're just with one other, you know, couple, for example, who's also vaccinated. So I think that we are working well at a distance, and we haven't yet set a date to go back into the office collectively.
Well, that day will hopefully be coming very soon. You know, these numbers look very, very encouraging. The case numbers here in Pima County, really just several dozen cases, today's numbers from the Arizona Department of Health. Do you think this is starting to be reflected as maybe one? I've seen one in maybe five residents of Arizona have had the shot. Do you think that's starting to be reflected in these numbers, Dr. Mazes?
I hope so. It is wonderful that we're already close to 20% vaccinated in Pima County. And I really encourage listeners, get your vaccine as soon as you're eligible. It will free your life to a certain degree and more as time goes by. It will reassure you that you're at lower risk, that you're less likely, it seems, to transmit it to others. So I think it's looking very hopeful in Pima County after a dark time.
All right. The light at the end of the tunnel for sure. Dr. Mays, is always a pleasure. Stay safe. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Dr. Victoria Mays is our contributor on health for her monthly visit with us on the Buckmaster Show. And you can follow her on her website, victoriamazesmd.com. You can also follow her at Twitter, VMazes. Coming up next, a visit to the Reed Park Zoo. Dr. Mazes was talking about getting out and finding some joy. Well, that might be a great place to do it, to take a visit to the zoo. We'll talk about that in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. Our guests appear courtesy Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Be right back.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on this St. Patrick's Day. The following segment is presented by Reed Park Zoo, founded in 1965 by the then City of Tucson Parks Director Gene Reed. It was founded as an exhibit of exotic birds. The zoo has now grown to become one of America's top zoos, with over 500 animals from all over the world and welcoming some 500,000 visitors annually. With us on the live line, Dr. Sue Tegelsky, the Director of Zoological Operations for the Reed Park Zoo. Sue, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing great. I just wish you could be here at the zoo right now. It's such a beautiful day.
The weather's wonderful,
and the guests are having a great time.
I was just going to say, what a beautiful time to be at the zoo and just to be outside and in a glorious day, not too hot for sure. I just wondered, Sue, how do the animals react to the different climates? Do they get friskier in this cooler weather?
Well, you can imagine, since we don't get a lot of rain, when we get a little bit of drizzle or rain, they often get super playful and frisky. And then now these temperatures are just wonderful, because even the animals that are a little bit cold sensitive, it's now warming up enough that they can all be out all day long. And it's not, of course, too hot yet. So this is a perfect time to come see active animals at the zoo.
And have there been some new animals added to the portfolio?
Oh, yes. So last fall, we had a very busy fall. Of course, with COVID, zoos, you know, exchange animals among themselves. And we were set to receive a variety of animals, and that was temporarily put on hold. But late fall, we had quite a few new animals join our collection, including our giraffes, Penelope and Sota. So we have two young giraffes that are currently in the process of meeting our older giraffe. We had four African wild dogs, and they have just been a true delight. They're very, very playful. They're two-year-old dogs. They hunt in a pack. They live in Africa. They're about 70% effective at hunting, so far more than a lion on its own, and it's because they live in these big packs. So when you come here to the zoo, you see a lot of great social dynamics, lots of interaction between the dogs, much like our elephants. So they're very social animals.
I remember a pack of those African wild dogs following us when we were in a vehicle doing a game drive on the Serengeti back in the 1980s. They are a very curious little animal, and they have an incredible sense of smell, as I recall.
They do. They really do. And you were fortunate to see them. They're one of the animals that their populations are struggling a little bit. Some of it's habitat destruction, but the other thing, you wouldn't think of it here in the U.S., but parvo. So, you know, we have our dogs here in the U.S. primarily. We get them vaccinated, and that's been a major threat to African wild dogs. So when our guests come here, we talk a little bit about conservation and threats to species in the wild and what we can do here, both in our community and then globally, to help wild animals.
I'm always interested in the journey of an animal to a zoo. How does an animal even wind up in the zoo? And of course, every case will be different, but generally, how does it work?
Well, for most of our animals, we work with our partner zoos, so other associated AZA associated zoos, so the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. We work together. There are about 240 of those zoos, so we have really high standards of care for our animals. I don't know, Bill, if you're familiar, there's over 2,800 zoos in the U.S.
Wow.
So this is a small segment of zoos that we work with. And together, we talk about, well, what animals would we like to have in our zoos? And then there's actually these plans that are proposed. We don't want to breed animals if we don't have homes for them. So, for example, Tony, our lion, we had our very ill lion, Shambe, passed away, our male, and we still have two females here. Mm-hmm. And so we were not necessarily needing to breed them, but there was a male lion from San Antonio who needed a home. So we said, well, he can come and take Shambe's place. And so it's making arrangements for, you know, who has space, which animals should be breeding and making youngsters. So Tony traveled, and sometimes it's by air, sometimes it's on the road, and typically with a veterinarian on board to make sure the transport goes okay. Typically, the animals are conditioned to travel as much as we can get them ready. So if they're going to travel, whatever kind of crate they're going to go in, they have access to, they get treats in. So we get them a little bit prepared, and then it's game day. Everybody's always a little nervous, and the animal either gets on in its crate onto a plane or on a the vehicle, and they're hauled to their new zoo. And with Tony, he did wonderfully, unloaded from his crate and acted like he had found his new home. He was very relaxed, and he has now met the two female lions, but only through a mesh door. They haven't all yet gotten together. We're waiting to make sure that they really are comfortable with one another before we do that.
And that whole getting to know each other probably, I would think, varies from animal species to each is going to have a different protocol. So it will just be nature will just have to take its course, right, Sue?
It's true. So there are things that we can do to help the process along. So when Tony, our lion, arrived here at Reed Park, he was in our health center. So he underwent a short quarantine period, and he received toys and scents from the girls and vice versa. So they got to smell each other before they actually saw each other. So mm-hmm. you can take those little baby steps to kind of get them used to one another. But to some degree, some animals, it's a few days, others it's a few months. With lions, we tend to be cautious because if they don't get along, the consequences are pretty grave. So we want to make sure that they're very comfortable before all three of them are together.
Are you comfortable with the whole portfolio that you have right now of the types of animals you have at the zoo, Sue?
Well, you know, we each year we review our institutional collection plan, so the kinds of animals that we have, and review what might fit well in our zoo. And we look at things like our climate, our financial situation, our space available, our expertise, what can our vet team manage, what can our animal care staff manage, and then, of course, what do our visitors want to see? And we have plans to add more animals in our Asia section. So when we expand, we hope to add bring tigers back to Reed Park Zoo. But currently our new African wild dogs are where our former tiger habitat was. We decided that habitat was too small for tigers. So we put, we added the wild dogs, but would like to bring tigers back, red pandas and other species. Also though, on a smaller scale, we look at even areas like our aviaries and think about, okay, what birds are doing well together? What other birds might we be able to add in? And then work with our partner zoos, again, to see which zoos might need to share animals more quickly than others in terms of they've had great success and lots of offspring and need homes for them.
Sue, give us a quick overview of some special events this spring at the Reed Park Zoo.
You bet. So right now, this week through Sunday, we are staying open late until 6:30 p.m. just so folks can enjoy spring break here at the zoo. And then in April, we have Penzi, our young elephant, will be turning one. I can't believe it. So we have a couple days of celebrations for her. That year just went by so quickly, including a breakfast with her on April 4th. So those are some things right around the corner that we're really excited about.
And the animals, that one-year anniversary, the birthday, what would be an appropriate, you don't really want to give the baby elephant a birthday cake, but is there something special or what?
here's the funny thing. Her animal care team gets cake, but for her, okay. We watch her sugar intake and her diet like hawks. You wouldn't believe. So she will get perhaps watermelon. That's one of the elephants really love watermelon and oranges and apples. So she'll get a little bit of sweets, but not too much. She won't indulge as much as we do.
And of course, there'll be all sorts of information available. Folks can find out what's going on by visiting your the website, reedparkzoo.org, correct?
That's right. That's absolutely right. The best spot to find all the info on the zoo.
Dr. Sue Tegelsky. Thank you,
correct.
Sue, very much for joining us. Always a pleasure to find out about how the animals are doing. And it sounds like, boy, this week would be a great week weather-wise to get out there and say hello or get reacquainted with the
That's
animals.
Right.
Sue, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
All right. The Buckmaster Show continues on this St. Patrick's Day in our Green Things Zocalo Village studios right after this.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on this St. Patrick's Day. A good time now to start really seriously thinking about getting away and taking a drive over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where the Gila National Wilderness is greening up big time. Had some recent rains, so it'd be delightful over in that neck of the woods. You can start your planning and figure out what you want to do. There are all sorts of great suggestions on their website, southwestnewmexico.org, and only a 3-hour drive. Great places to stay. Those are also listed on the website. All right, let's talk a little bit about Tucson's Irish connection with our contributor on history, historian Ken Scoville. Ken, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm fine, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Same to you. And Tucson does have a strong Irish connection, doesn't it?
Yes. When I was doing a little research on this, studying history is all about connections, and it's interesting how you see things connect together. Realizing that Tucson's, other than the native people, is an interesting mix of ethnic groups and backgrounds calling Tucson home. And two of the major reasons this has always been is because of our military connection, no matter what the era, and as the last outpost to regain one's health. And think about, always turning on the news, migration of people is always in the news, and it's usually about conflict or famine. Ireland has also, through its past, had a conflictual relationship with England. There was a potato famine and typhus in 1845, and this lasted for several years. And just doing a little research, over 1 million people died, and maybe possibly that same amount would migrate to other parts of the world. And our first real Irish arrival would be Hugo O'Connor, who was probably the most famous in some ways. He joined the Spanish military because of the conflicts in Ireland and England and the mistreatment of the Irish. And again, he's famous for establishing our Presidio type site for modern-day Tucson.
How about some other prominent Irish individuals that called Tucson home, Ken?
Well, and again, making this connection, realizing the famine, potato famine, and all the conflicts in Ireland, in 1843-45, we start going to war with Mexico. So the Irish would be coming to the United States. Of course, they weren't greeted with open arms, but they would come in, and employment was difficult, so they joined the army, and one of the pluses was that she became a citizen. So two of our famous military people out here during that era, up to the Indian Wars, Major John Gregory Bork, who was a Civil War hero, and then went to West Point and graduated, and he served at Camp Lowell and Fort Lowell. And I've actually read and referenced his book at times. It's entitled, in 1891, he wrote On the Border with Crook. It's still a much-used reference and a great firsthand account of Indian Wars. Our other military Irish relation is Lieutenant Howard B. Cushing, who was killed while chasing marauding Apaches, and this was in 1871. Buried at Fort Lowell, referenced in On the Border book, and this is why we have Cushing Street today. During that era, if you were attacked and killed by Apaches, sometimes you had a street named after you.
And Lou Murphy, of course, a prominent Irishman.
Yes, he, along with Mr. Tully of the merchant group Tully and Achaw, he was the mayor of Tucson, and we have a Tully Elementary Magnet School named in his honor. Lou Murphy, and I remember many times going to council meetings during his tenure as mayor. 16 years as mayor, and the nice segue is that he always was famous for wearing Wyaberry or Mexican shirts, Mexican wedding shirts.
Well, there's always been kind of this Irish-Mexican connection with the cultures. In fact, as you probably know, during the Mexican War of 1848, the St. Patrick Brigade of Irishmen fought alongside the Mexicans against the United States in that war. Yeah, it's called the St. Patrick Brigade.
Right. Some of them splintered off. There were groups that were fighting with the U.S. and groups were fighting with Mexico.
So, yep.
And like all conflicts, you find out later which group should you have sided with.
But they certainly, the Mexicans and the Irish cultures do have some shared beliefs.
Oh, very much. And their importance of family, Catholicism, and not being afraid of hard work. And another aspect of this is their reputations big time for celebrations that express within their family and the community, like what we're celebrating today. Cinco de Mayo Day would be for the Mexican community. Always the theme of good food, drink, plenty of singing, dancing, and other kinds of music.
And we've had parades in the past. I think COVID, of course, well, I know COVID pretty much ended any outdoor activities within the parades, but I'm sure they'll return again. The St. Patrick's Day Parade began when?
Well, it actually began in 1987, and I was surprised. The first year was in South Tucson, and the next year that it would expand to the actual city of Tucson. When I was speaking to some people involved with the parade, they mentioned they sort of catch up. Next year's St. Patrick's Day parade for 2022, they say, is going to be the biggest ever.
Wow. But was there a particular family, Ken Scoville, that that started this whole the parade tradition here in town?
Well, maybe it's sort of indirectly on the parade, but the first family to really acknowledge this Irish presence in Tucson was the McArdle family. And in 1970, I visited with one of the family members doing a little work on this. It is when Ann Leahy McArdle instructed her son Andrew to take a can of green paint and a brush to make our mark. And that was in 1970. I just think this is great. And then every year, the Shamrocks seem to get a little bit bigger.
You know, let's go back. We've got a couple of minutes left to Hugo O'Connor. I recall that there were some relatives still here in town related to O'Connor. And as I recall, there was even, I think Tucson had a sister city of where he came from in Ireland. Do you know anything about that?
I do not know if his original. I have to pull that out of my memory. But I know even today we have a sister city in Ireland, which is Roscommon.
Roscommon, yes, that's correct. Yeah,
we have a sister city there that's a nice connection. Also, another thing I should mention, Ray Carroll, who you had on lots of times when he was on the Board of Supervisors, he was in the founding group for the parade and has been a Grand Marshal in the past.
Ken, I've got a moment or two here to go, and I know you keep up to date on development issues. Do you have anything for us today? I know there's a lot going on, right?
There's a lot going on.
And I know that the former monastery, I've been by there a couple of times recently over on Country Club. I'm just wondering to get a few of your thoughts. Do you like what you see there?
Well, I'm glad that the monastery is safe and protected,
right.
And there's going to be some kind of public use for that. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, and I don't want to be an architecture critic, I think it could have been softened a little bit, the modern apartments, that you don't want to have the buildings look like the monastery, but, you know, there's different philosophies. Some people want it to be entirely different, almost jarringly different, and sometimes you want to soften it and maybe have a few details that they take from the historic building to put it into the modern context. But, you know, in today's Tucson, and like most cities, you're thrilled just when the building's saved.
Do you have any idea, Ken, what they're going to do with the monastery? Is that planned to be a performing arts area or a rec center?
I have not, you know, obviously with COVID, I've not been in quite as much circulation need to be, but it'll be a public venue. I would imagine it'll be a multiple-use venue. There'll be different uses at different times of the year, and maybe some ongoing might be a restaurant in there, other things that are sort of anchors, but with lots of different things going on.
All right, Ken Scoville, and hopefully as COVID, the pandemic, and more people get their shots and things, the case numbers continue to drop, you'll be once again able to give your walking tours in the downtown area. Yeah.
I'm thrilled about it, and I'm fast approaching 70, so that's why I've been a little bit more cautious this pandemic.
Yeah, you're still a very young guy. Ken Scoville, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Ken Scoville, the resident historian on the Buckmaster Show on this green, I almost said a Green Things Day. It's a Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. I've got green on my mind on this St. Patrick's Day, and I guess that's a good place to be. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show on behalf of Tom Fairbanks, who is wearing the green like his green polo shirt. He's all ready to celebrate. And that's going to wrap it up. We've got Dave Ramsey coming up next with The Ramsey Show, talking about your money. Back with you in about 23 hours with The Buckmaster Show. Have a great afternoon and evening.